PR.
Hey, it's John Hyatt, and you're listening to WMNF Tampa.
Hi, this is Miss Julie. Our next week-long membership drive begins at 9 a.m. on Wednesday, June 3rd, and goes through the morning of June 10th. We're seeking volunteers to help take calls, tally donations, and food donors to help feed those hardworking and incredible volunteers. Restaurants, caterers, or chefs can find out more about donating drinks, snacks, or full meals by calling me at 813-238-8001 or email missjulie at wmnf.org. I can also help get you registered to volunteer. Just be in touch. Thanks.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. And I say it's all right.
Da 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 da. You're listening to WMNF, Tampa Bay Area's community radio station. I'm John Buss, and I'll be hosting today's program, the Sustainable Living Program. I'll probably have a co-host myself, Brother Pat's in here today, but we'll get with him here in a second. Hey, we're going to start the show with a special segment, being it is Memorial Day, and about the Tampa Bay Psychedelic Meetup, which is a group here in Tampa Bay, and its effort to use its therapies involving psychedelic treatments to help veterans with medical issues. Then we'll talk a little bit with Pat, which had been in the past, I guess he is part-time, a federal emergency management agency insurance adjuster, how to prepare for major hurricanes and possible ways to have electricity when the grid is down. First, I want to mention that WMNF has its summer fund drive coming about to start, and with the state and federal cuts to public media, we really need your help this time. It's really easy to donate here. You just go to WMNF.org, and you can make a donation at any time by hitting the tip jar. We really need to support the station. It's free speech here in the Tampa Bay area, and really it's all up to us. Kitty's, I think, on vacation, so we're not going to have our gardener's calendar. And, you know, I was kind of working on this show a month or so ago, and I realized it was on Memorial Day, and I go, oh my goodness, that's always kind of hard to find a guest for a live program on Memorial Day. But I was lucky to have some friends, and one of them is Pat, and Pat grew up here in St. Pete, and he worked with his father doing construction. He was a firefighter for the city of Ocala, and like I say, he's an insurance, well, he used a different term, but it's kind of like an insurance adjuster for FEMA, and he's traveled around and visited all kinds of storm areas, and he knows what works and doesn't work, and maybe we'll be talking to Pat a little bit about that. But the truth of the matter, Pat, the reason I really love him and he's my hero is the size of his solar system. He's got, I think it's a, how big is it? This is Pat Mahoney.
I generate 14 times more electricity than I use. I'm the biggest Hillsborough County private install, and John Buss was the first and my inspiration.
Yeah. So Pat, what is this Tampa Bay Psychedelics Community? You've been part of that group for a couple of years, right?
Yeah, it was started by this wonderful, I call her Shiro woman, Lauren Moquin. And okay. She's an interesting history, but she developed it for education and integration for people trying to access this stuff to heal their, you know, trauma from whatever reason. And I don't think she minds me sharing it, she really struggled with alcoholism for a while. And that's a big problem in my family. So she overcame it through using these plant medicines, and she wanted to share that with the world. And there's a whole bunch of people got behind her. So it's education, you know, integration, they call it, and communicate to help pull people into that if they're interested. You know, that's what we do. And we're just a group of people that get together and do this. And that has broken off into other groups that have social meetups and parties and all sorts of things. But all we focus on is integrating people who want to learn how to get into it and what happens, you know. And we share experiences so everybody can understand they're not any crazier than anybody else. You know, that's basic outcome. So that's
well, you know, when I started planning this show, I was talking to Pat, and he says, John, it's Memorial Day. We need to talk about Memorial Day.
Yes.
And, you know, it's kind of funny. I've done a lot of these shows. I started doing the show in 2004, and I've done a lot of Memorial Day shows, and I never kind of paused to think about it, about, you know, the importance of it. And, you know, I'm a veteran. I'm a Vietnam veteran. And I actually know some of those people that died in wars. And one in particular, I became a real good friend with just for a couple of months. I knew him, and next thing I know, I'm alive and he's dead. And, you know, I never got to really mourn that too much over there. But here, I think a lot about this guy. Richard Romeister was his name. Really cute, nice young man, 18-year-old. And, you know, he didn't make it home, and I did. And I always thought, well, gee whiz, if there was something I could do, yeah, in honor of that fella, that would be the most important thing I could do. God bless him. And Pat, you told me you had a really cool little story about, it's kind of right, homegrown right here in St. Peter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My I want to dedicate this to my mother, Betsy Sommerkamp. They spelled their name Sommerkamp. It's strange. Them Germans, you know, they're weird. So her older brother, Dudley Sommerkamp, was the first Marine to volunteer for the service after we were bombed by the Japanese in Pearl Harbor in St. Petersburg. And he was the first Marine to be killed. And he became famous. He had 3 Purple Hearts and a Bronze Star, I believe, and he's memorialized in the St. Petersburg Historical Museum. It used to be in the front, but they've archived it, I think, now, and I hope they bring it back out after this. But anyway, I want to dedicate this to my mother, because ever since I can remember as a boy, we would go, I'd be with my mom, you know, and she'd be there grieving that gravesite, and I didn't know what it meant. I just, you know, I was a child, and she was there, and I watched her whole life. She's passed now, but sorry if I cry, but I was sitting by a gravestone one time, and about 2 years ago, and there was a woman dropping off some flowers to what appeared to be her brother, and she was crying and could barely walk back to the car with her daughter, and I walked over there and helped her, and I cried and sobbed the whole time. They must have thought I was crazy, but I told them they reminded me of my mother's suffering, and I thanked her for her loss, and I just want everybody to know that, you know, don't disrespect people's feelings in that matter, because a lot of people lost a whole lot. His name was Happy, my uncle, who I never met. And she was my brother's her older brother, and he died in World War II. And I just want to dedicate this to her and anyone who suffered. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat, for that. I hate to make you do this, but you're going to have to introduce these people.
That's all right. I'm over that. Yeah, they come and go, them emotions. Don't.
Pat's going to introduce the guests. And like I say, these two guests are working with the Tampa Bay Psychedelic Meetup to help people.
And we are fortunate to have them. Dr. Cheryl Lowry is a physician, retired U.S. Air Force Colonel, and former senior military medical leader with extensive experience in aerospace medicine, operational medicine, expeditionary health care, and medical research. She has led major health care and readiness operations, global deployments, polar medicine, and international medical collaborations. She served as a program director for University of Texas Aerospace Medicine residency in Galveston, Texas, where she trained physicians to become NASA flight surgeons. Dr. Lowry is founder of Tactical Mind Research Coalition, where she focuses on advancing research into innovative behavioral health treatments for veterans, first responders, and others working in high-stress professions. Her work includes research into neuroplasticity, trauma recovery, and integrative approaches designed to improve mental health outcomes, resilience, and recovery. Together with her colleagues, Dr. Lowry has supported medical operations, humanitarian missions, and scientific expeditions around the world, including work in Antarctica and other austere environments. She's currently pursuing a doctoral studies in integrative neuroscience with a focus on emerging approaches that combine neuromodulation, breath work, trauma-informed psychotherapy, and psychedelic-assisted therapies to support behavioral health and human performance. God bless you, girl. Okay, another friend we have here, and fortunate to have him, Dr. Brian Pinkston, is a retired U.S. Air Force colonel, physician, and public health expert with more than 30 years of experience in military, aerospace, occupational, and operational medicine. During his career, he served in leadership roles in the Air Force, Veterans Health Administration, and academic medicine, including as chief medical officer for a major VA outpatient clinic serving more than 23,000 veterans. Dr. Pinkston is a co-founder of the Tactical Research Coalition, a nonprofit organization focused on innovative, evidence-based approaches for mental health, trauma recovery, and wellness. The organization was recently selected to participate in the U.S. Advanced Research Projects Agency for Health Evident Initiative, for Health Evident Initiative, in partnership with the Diamond Therapeutics to study psilocin, that's this stuff in magic mushrooms, I'll add that, and emerging behavioral health treatments for veterans and other high-risk populations. The initiative is part of the recent presidential executive order for accelerating medical treatments in serious mental health illnesses. Dr. Pinkston is currently pursuing a doctoral studies in integrative neuroscience, focusing on approaches that combine neuromodulation, breathwork, EMDR, he's going to have to explain that, Jungian depth psychology, and psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy. He is committed to helping expand education, reduce stigma, and improve access to responsible mental health care options for veterans and others struggling with invisible wounds. And I got to tell you, I'm just delighted to have met you two and have you in our community. Thank you for being here. Please take over.
Thank you so much for having us.
I got to say, what we got? We got two colonels here and a PFC.
And a whole redneck. Yeah, he never served.
Yeah. How many colonels does it get the take to get the job done? One PFC.
One PFC, exactly. You're running the show, man.
Hey, you guys, one of you take the lead.
Well, I'd like to start by saying thank you. It's an honor to be here on Veterans Day. I can't think of anything I would rather be doing than being here with you all. Brian and I sort of got into this pathway, you know, being military. We didn't have a lot of exposure into the psychedelic medicine at all. It was all traditional medicine training. You know, you have something ailing you, take a pill for it, you'll get better. It's easy. But it's not that simple. And when we started working with veterans, we realized there was two populations. There was a population that kind of became their disease process and another population who was actually thriving in spite of their disease process. And the difference between those two communities seemed to be willingness to think outside the box, pursuing different things like mindfulness and medical marijuana and psychedelics and mindfulness practices and just out-of-body experiences and just exploring those things that we don't always talk about and they're not mainstream. Mm-hmm. So that sort of got us interested in, well, how do we use these therapeutically and help people, especially with mental health? And that's kind of what led us here to down this path.
We were old flight surgeons, and so basically whatever worked in the field, you had what you had, but a lot of times you didn't have what you needed, so you had to figure it out. And so that's how we became very open-minded to going, okay, if there's something in the local community that works, as long as it doesn't hurt somebody, then let's see what we can do and do it reasonably and safe if we can.
Beautiful. It's like the golden rule in medicine. You two are hitting the nail on the head.
I wanted to say that we have our guests here, two doctors. We're talking about psychedelic therapies. And, of course, Pat Mahoney's here. And if anybody would like to call in, our number is 813-239-9663. Or you can get a hold of us at DJ at WMNF.org. And we do have a text line, 813-239-9663. Go right ahead. Oh, well, what is the connection then between the Tampa Bay psychedelic community and your work?
So we were actually looking for something to do on Bicycle Day on April 19th and stumbled upon Lauren and her group leading a walk, and we thought, well, these seem like people that we need
really?
To get to know.
I hadn't heard this. I wasn't there.
Yeah, you weren't there. She called you out. So it was a pleasure to get to meet the group and got to know them, and we started talking about some of the work that we were doing.
So it was just serendipitous.
Yes.
You just stumbled across. Wow.
Absolutely.
So, and for those that don't know about Bicycle Day, it was actually Albert Hofmann who figured out and was trying to do the drugs that he was working with had to do with fungi that had vasoactive properties to control bleeding, stuff like that. We use it actually, one of the drugs that he provided or found, methergen in pregnancy to help women stop bleeding after delivery.
But back in the 40s, wasn't it?
Back in the 40s. Okay. Actually, this is 39 is when he actually came up with the other compound. Oh. But he was also working, looking at drugs that we still use for headaches, that because migraines are very, very vasoactive as well. So it causes blood vessel spasm and all that. And so he had developed this thing that he called lysergic diethylamide number 25, his 25th compound, and tested it on the rodents, and they just didn't act normal like how they would otherwise act. 5 years later, he shelved it because it wasn't doing what it needed to do. 5 years later, he decided to resynthesize this, and so there's something came to me that said there was something in this, and therefore it was LSD. He got a little drop on his skin and started having some visual changes and stuff like that. He decided, I think it was 3 or 4 days later, on April 19th, 1943, to take 250 micrograms, which is an infinitesimally small amount of medicine for most medications, but it was a huge dose of LSD. And he decided he thought he was gonna die. So he took and said, this is in Switzerland in the during the World War II. And he said, I don't want to die in my lab. I'm going to go home.
But he had the feeling like I'm going to die. Yeah.
He thought he was going to die. He didn't want to die in his laboratory. So he said, and I can't get access to a car because we're in Switzerland in 1943. We can't do that. So he rode his bicycle home. And therefore, that's how Bicycle Day started.
I want to share with everybody who hasn't taken any of these things, well, kind of in a general way what it is. Okay, imagine that your ego or your person or whoever you are is a box inside of a ball. And you're living in that box, and outside the ball is the rest of your brain and body, okay? And that's you. So when you take this stuff, for some reason it appears as if it takes the box away temporarily, and you see a reality that you did not see. Hence, I'm afraid I'm dying. He was dying, but it wasn't him. It was his belief of who he was. And Einstein said this thing that summarizes, and I'll quit. I must be willing to release what I think I am in order to become what I could be. That's what we're at the precipice of this transition, I believe. I could be wrong, but this is what I believe, and that's why I'm here to serve the community in this capacity. I can't tell you too how happy I am to be sitting here. John Butt started the whole thing. It's his fault.
Pat, keep on talking.
I'm done. Love you, bro. My friend.
So how is this going to work? I mean, what is the relationship? Are you finding patients through the meetup or using the meetup to facilitate the drugs?
The trials.
So it was really, we were just interested in meeting other people that were exploring their consciousness and, mm-hmm. and using these substances in a productive way. So that was what we were going for. As an aside, we do have two studies. One's ongoing right now that we're recruiting for. It's a ketamine study. Ketamine, not because it's a great drug necessarily, but because it's a legal way to help people break down those barriers and actually get mental health work, like do the really deep internal process work that needs to happen with processing trauma. So we have a study that we're recruiting for now where we're using some light and sound and breath work sort of to do some brain entrainment, because we think if we properly prepare somebody for a ketamine session, we can reduce the amount of ketamine that they will need to have recovery and feel better about their depression, their anxiety, their PTSD. And there's a lot of people that are hooked on drugs like ketamine, and that's not a good thing for anybody. So if we can reduce the reliance on the medication by using these non-medical techniques, that's what this trial is about.
And what the colonel meant to say was ketamine, it's not that it's not a classical psychedelic. Yeah. It is actually the most widely used anesthetic in the world because it doesn't reduce respiratory rate. And veterans are used to seeing that around, at least the ones that work in like combat situations, combat medics, because it's something that if somebody's in horrible pain, they can actually give it to the person, dissociate them from the pain, let them get through it without having to worry about them stopping breathing, which is a huge thing. In this particular case, you use sub-anesthetic doses, much lower doses, and it can create a psychedelic-like effect. It creates a similar type effect, but without the classic chemistry that's associated with mm-hmm. others.
And you guys are doing what they call microdosing, right?
Not with ketamine. Talking about the next one that we've actually had that.
You should tell us about that one.
Okay. That one actually has been, again, that was associated with the presidential order to try to help with mental health. And we were given a grant through the Advanced Research Projects Agency for Health, which is structured like DARPA, if you've heard of DARPA before.
But yeah, Military Information Technology.
Correct. And so, but this is about improving health. That's what the whole agency is for. Mm. And so they will be doing a microdosing, and it'll probably be getting kicked off around the fall mm-hmm. before we get everything in order to actually execute giving dosing and that sort of thing. But it will be microdosing.
Cool.
Psilocin.
And just so everybody knows, this is not a new thing. As a matter of fact, it's believed that this goes back to the beginning of our evolution with the Stone Age theory of people eating these chemicals when they were hunting and gathering and stumbled across our species. So it should not be ignored as a potential remedy for our problems. The Navajo Indians, all these different Indian tribes practice it every day as part of their religion, and it don't hurt nobody. It's not a drug to them. It's a food. And we should start thinking a little bit more like that with natural things as opposed to synthesized, you know. But I want to do that for the community. Don't call it a drug. Don't associate psilocybin or magic mushrooms with fentanyl or cocaine. It's not just.
Well, on the Western side of things, too, it was at least going on for about 2,000 years plus. In Greece, ancient Greece, they always see the mysteries.
Eleusis.
Yeah, Eleusis. And they
the
were
Immortality the, Key, the book.
Immortality Key, Brian Marescu, who thinks that there was, that the drink that they used, called the Kaikion, was actually laced or had some fungus in it that grows on barley, and that the female, or the lady, the...
midwife?
No, the temple... The priestesses actually knew exactly how to pick the barley so that there wasn't too much fungus.
Ah.
Where you go into the Salem witch trials because they had a wet year and grow too much fungus, and they think that may have been associated with a little bit with people having struggles with that. But they knew how to grow it just right to have that.
They dosed it.
Yeah.
Some people think the Last Supper with Christianity was the same thing as Dionysus was doing in ancient Greece. They were going to Eleusis. They wanted to keep it from the Romans. It's amazing that the correlation in that book is fascinating.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You're listening. That was the voice of Pat Mahoney.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Brian is here and Cheryl's here. They're both colonels and the retired colonels from the Air Force, and they're working with VAs. Our number here is 813-239-9663. If you want to give us a call, if you want to be part of this conversation about drugs, not drugs, but plants, or you can send us a text at dj@wmnf.org.
John, Pat, I forgot to say something about the community. The community started out with Lauren, but it's been around for, I don't know, a long time. Mm-hmm. Maybe 6-8 years, maybe before I got involved with it. And it broke off into different groups. There's one called the Psychedelic Tribe, and they do a lot of, they meet at kava bars all over, like the Tampa Bay area. And we have mm-hmm. different locations, and they pop up on there. They all have separate web pages. And we also, we got community communication all over the state and even all over the world of other people who come to town. So, and we send Lauren to these big meetings where they have national conferences for the country, because just so you all know, this is a emerging business and cultural revolution, I believe, based on what I've seen. So there's two aspects of it. One is education, and one is commerce. So, we want to make sure that's important. Everybody understands that there's a commerce developing around it, but it's not the same as the scientists who are trying to use it to heal people. That's important for the community to say that. We're here to integrate people in the community who want information about how to use the science to heal themselves. We're not here to throw parties, but we're not against fun. Got it?
Well, and we came actually ourselves to have something to do on Bicycle Day, something different, and just to hang out with some cool people. And then the last meeting that we had somebody that was talking about making music with plants, hooking them up to the electrical chemical and making music with plants. Somebody else talking about shamanic drumming. Somebody else talking about the cultural aspects, sociocultural aspects of all this. It's a pretty fascinating group of people.
I forgot to tell you, in the 1600s, when the Spanish went into Brazil, the women were doing the ceremony because the women were thought to understand how to handle the erotic kind of energy that comes up. And so they didn't let the men do it. They let the women do it because they were more sensitive, you know. And the Spanish were going to kill them because they'd been killing the witches over in Europe. So all the men stepped up and said, oh, wait a minute. If we give it, can we give it? So that's how the males took it over. It used to be the females because, you know, I don't want to point out too much of a difference, but I think there might be slight differences in the two species, of the species. But anyway, so, and that's fun. You know, it's interesting, but it's not necessarily good that we let the men continue to lead the stuff because they're too, like, macho. Here, take the max dose, see what happens. I call it the hero dose, but it's just sometimes that could be stupid. You know, it depends on the individual.
Sorry. Well, you mentioned the community, and I'd like to point out that this, it's nice to see people forming a community around this, because we don't do community anymore in the sense that the people that used to use these medicines used to do community. You had elders, you lived in the same place with your family, you had a support network around you. So when something was going wrong, you had all that community support in addition to some of these medicines like the mushrooms or other plant-based medicines. We don't do that anymore. So having a community that understands proper use of these medicines, not that using them for recreational purposes is necessarily bad, but things can go wrong with recreational or medical use. So having some ceremony and community around it, I think, is a really important safety idea.
Yeah, agreed. Good point.
Yeah, you know, we don't talk about spirituality much. And this is what this is all about, really. This is a very deep thing. I'm just kind of curious about our youth, young people, all the problems they have, and they talk about all the depressants and pharmaceutical drugs that these kids are taking. And of course, you see what's happening with the school shootings and all that. And they're definitely, what we're doing isn't working. And we need to come up with a more natural way to deal with problems, and even with our youth. And like I said, I think this is, you know, I was, you know, before the show, you're kind of worried about talking about this stuff, you know, that's been, you know, demonized for years and years and years, marijuana and dope and, or THC and these different plants and stuff.
And there's a danger too, right? There's a danger.
Well, there's a danger. Look at alcohol. Yeah. You know, talk about danger. I mean, really, this stuff is, I think, a low-key kind of...
But I think it's 3% of people could... It's my understanding. I'm not educated on the subject, but I think, as I recall, 3% of the people can trigger schizophrenia. And one of the things we warn people about when they come to us, we say, are you taking any of these... They call them SSRIs, serotonin uptake inhibitors. Mm-hmm. And we tell them, do not take these chemicals until you're off of that for a year. We don't know, so we just warn people, because it can cause a condition I'm aware of called serotonin storm, and your body heats way up, and it's really bad, you know. And what we teach people, by the way, at the community is that we teach people it's very important that you understand what you're doing, and wherever you do it, you'd set and setting. You need to be comfortable where you are. Do not take it at a horror show, or it'll magnify it by 10, and you will not be happy. Got it? There you go. I'm done. Sorry.
Comments?
Set and setting is truly important. Yeah, if you're trying to use this in a therapeutic way, it's good to have an intention to go into the ceremony or the set and setting with some sort of an intention. What am I working on? What trauma is haunting me? But there's so many other ways to not even use a psychedelic, right? There's getting outside and doing some breath work and greeting the sun and exercising and finding something to have gratitude for on a daily basis. Pick one thing, go outside, look at the sun, pick one thing to be grateful for in the day. It really helps your mindset.
The other thing, two things. One is the biggest risk for serotonin syndrome is associated with ayahuasca, because there's one of the components actually can increase that. There are other psychedelics that can be and have been taken in research trials, especially like Robin Carhart Harris out of I believe it's Stanford now, has been able to do that successfully, actually. Mm. The other thing I was going to say as far as community and where we are now is I think we're very disconnected. And there's an endogenous or internal drug that we call dopamine that tells us what's important in life. And dopamine comes from sex. Dopamine comes from alcohol. Dopamine comes from all kinds of things. And it also comes from social media. Likes, everything else. So we are getting addicted to that whole process of anything that increases dopamine. It's not one size fits all.
Yeah. It looks like we got a call. Norm, you're there. Norm from Tampa, you're listening?
Oh, yeah, I'm listening. I'm intrigued by this conversation and stuff. You know, because, you know, I just so happened, one of my adventures in life, you know, my dear adventures in life is that I did become a pharmacist. And we studied about the, and I, your guess is one, your guess is right in the sense that, you know, these products, these things that we talk about are hallucinogenics or whatever, have been around for centuries and have been used for centuries. And the problem, of course, is the problem with them is that one of your guests is that they're abused. That we, you know, instead of taking or using rituals and stuff, but, you know, folks, as always, and within every society, you know, there's always a guy way back from the ancient that said, well, if I can take one drop, what happens if I take six drops? Mm-hmm. If I take one, what happens if I drink one, you know, gallon and stuff? And, you know, this is how we've learned in life, how the side effects or the adverse effects of many of these products. But my input would be that, you know, that I always say, tell people, I say, you know, it doesn't matter. People talk about natural products versus synthetic or mass-produced products. I always tell people that really is a misconception, in that every being, every if you want to call it a drug product or whatever, a drug product or poison, if you want to call it, has a, quote, mechanism of action. Mm. What does it do? How does it affect? And that is something that's indicative of all products. Even if you, for example, even if you drink gasoline, okay, it has a mechanism that it'll kill you. You know, there's a reason why it does it that way. We call those poisons, and poison. But even then, in medicine and in life, you know, things that have been extremely poisonous have been used, been redesigned and used therapeutically in medicine. One good example, of course, is Cararin. Another one is this GLP, stuff we use, the people use. In fact, that was part of Gila Monster's spit. Mm. You know, that came from, derived from that, those products. So it's the origin, and again, a lot of things that we've stumbled across in medicine are things that we've stumbled across by accident. You know, and like I said, the ancients, I mean, these guys weren't ignorant, okay? These guys would see what the animals, see animals eat products.
Hey, I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
My name's Pat. I'm assuming you've taken these things. When you did you immediately feel connected to nature in a way that you hadn't been before earlier?
Well, that's just it, Pat. I haven't taken these things. I have not. But
you
I
haven't,
have
okay.
worked around people. I have worked in methadone clinics. I've, you know, get an understanding. Oh. Worked in these are people that abuse and stuff. And we've studied these things in pharmacology. And pharmacognosy, which they don't teach anymore. This is about the medicinal products as in terms of their, we call them natural medicinal products. Mm-hmm. You know, as at FAMU, we would take an orange and we would then get the citrate out of it and those sort of things like that. Yeah. Or you take rhododendron and break that down or whatever. But if you travel, when you study the history of medicine, you know, I don't know if they do this anymore. When you study the history of medicine, where it came from, where it derived from, you know, and its plant source and how it came about and how people, the ancient folks used it. I mean, people suffered from the same thing, you know, anxiety, you know, they had depression, they had ED functions, you know, erectile dysfunction.
Are you still doing this for a living?
They got to fighting and killing each other and that stuff.
Yeah.
And they always came with all and antibiotics. A good thing. And when my parents were from like the islands, they use a moss or a mold. Hmm. They ate that, scraped it up, and that was their antibiotic.
Yeah, we have a lot of people come to the community who are recovering from fentanyl, and they want to use this to try to get off it, and they have some success, you know.
Let me tell you about that. See, the thing that we know about, don't understand, the misconception about fentanyl is that fentanyl is a medicinal product that we use, and that is a fentanyl citrate. Okay, the fentanyl that people are getting killing themselves is fentanyl acetate.
Did not know
that. Well, you can tell any time that fentanyl citrate, fentanyl is what is known as a transmucosal. In other words, it works and it's going, you can use it IV, okay, but you take it across, it goes across the skin, across the mucosal membranes. And stuff. That's why you had the patch. It comes in the patch, the suppository, or troquet. Okay, anytime you hear that fentanyl, someone takes it orally, like that, that's a poison. Mm. Fentanyl acetate is a poison. It has the same similar property, but it has no medicinal value. And then what these guys do, but it's easy to make, okay? It's easy in a sense, it's more, it's whereas like a drug morphine or something, you have to grow that in the poppies and then you extract the morphine out of it, then you take it and you acetylate it and you can turn that into to what we call heroin, okay? Mm. Or codeine comes out of knowing the natural products, like, for example, like the opium, that becomes a morphine, codeine. Another drug is noscarpine.
Hey, we got to keep on point here. We'll get off in the weeds, maybe, but you got a lot of information about that.
That this fentanyl that they're talking about is a poison, and it's a poison. It gives you similar effect for a second, but it's deadly. All right.
Thanks for calling in, Norm. You're a great asset for the community. Thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you, Norm.
Thank you. That's great.
Yeah. I tell you what, I wanted to do a little segment with Pat. Is there any closing comments from you two, the doctor?
We got
one more call. We'll take the call, but go ahead.
The thing I would say is, again, thank you for having us today. And if you are interested in doing integration because you've had an experience and don't know what to do with what's come up, or you are interested in participating in one of our studies, our phone number, can I give our phone number out?
Sure.
Is 727-353-7727. And that'll get you to Amanda, and she she handles all the business end of everything that we do in our clinic. So,
and if you hear Kinetic, that's actually our business as well. So. Mm.
Okay. Good.
And that was Brian Pinkston and Laurie.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. You can kind of hang around with. We got one. Can we go ahead and take this last call? Is it Shelby? Shelby, you there?
Howdy, John. Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, buddy. Good to hear from you. Yeah. It's been well. Hey, I love the topic today. One of the things I would say, I try to like live in the gray, right? So I try as much as I can not to demonize things. Like, I understand what you guys are talking about and wanting to avoid like a lot of the medicines out there, like your serotonins, your Zoloft and all that. That at times has saved my life personally. But I have had great psychedelic opportunities where I've made some great art, and it does kind of create like a reset in my brain when I've done it. Now I'm at a point in my life, I'm not using any sort of drugs, whether it's medicinal or psychedelics or even, you know, marijuana. I am at a point where I'm just at peace with nature. Beautiful. And I love being and finding joy in other ways. Mm-hmm. So I love what we're talking about here today. And I just like to, you know, when we were talking about with what kids are going through, and it's so true about how we are completely addicted to our phones. And even as much as I know it, I still have a hard time getting off of it, and which is when I have to, like, go outside and literally just, like, I have a neighborhood where I see birds all day, and it brings me such joy. Yeah. So I think, you know, wherever we can to find that is good, and, you know, all we could do in this life is our best. Mm. So I do appreciate what you guys are talking about today, and, you know, I do think psychedelics are a great opportunity. I would just be wary to demonize too much of what is available for people, because a lot of people need something. And if it is something that's within their medication, let's get it done. You know what I mean?
We overreact at the community because we don't know. So we don't want to tell anybody we know something, so we're scared. You know, I don't mean to put any bad info on it, but we're scared to tell them to do something. It hurts them, you know.
Oh, absolutely. When that guy was going off about fentanyl being natural, I said, holy hell, I got to call him. So I do appreciate what you guys are doing. And I tell you what, when we had that, what was that, 2024, when we got hit by those two hurricanes, one after another, I ended up having two tabs of acid in the house, and I had no electricity. And I think I took those two tabs, and I put on a kaleidoscope video, and all I had was the darkness of the room in this kaleidoscope video, and I sat there and thought, it could be worse. And I could see my neighbors. And I got from the fear and worry I went through that psychedelic opportunity, I felt good. Again, let's live in the gray. Let's do our best. And I do appreciate this good discussion today and what you guys do for our community.
Well, thank you so much, Shelby. And it's so good to hear from you. I haven't heard from you in quite a while. I see you on Facebook. But thank you so much for calling.
Hey, John, God bless you. We'll talk soon. Take care.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, we got another phone call. Is Chris? Chris, you there? You listening? Chris.
Mushy, mushy, they say in Japan. Mushy, mushy, talk, talk.
You there? Oh, boy.
Okay. I bet that was Chris from our community. Is he?
Hello?
Hey, there you go. You're there.
Here I am. Hi, good morning. I'm someone who generally doesn't take psychedelics, although once I did, actually a couple times. And they really didn't affect me too much, but I think it's because I engage in regular spiritual practice constantly as I can, which I'd recommend after 35 years of focusing on my third eye as constantly as you can, as I can, and following the advice of Paramahansa Yogananda. I found so much success that when I have taken psychedelics before, they really don't do much for me other than having the same effects that if I were to exercise vigorously for a half hour. Mm. So, if you can focus on your third eye, as you may know, you can produce the DMT and dimethyltryptamine, so you don't feel as if you have to take it. And, of course, it's a lot more exciting to do it on your own, although, you know, these other substances are training wheels. They help you to get to a certain level, though once you're there, you can use your own recollection to imagine and re-experience, relive those experiences without external.
Chris, I identify with what you're saying 100%, but it's very idiosyncratic, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to push back on the doctor a little bit, too. This intention thing, I was happened to be at an ayahuasca ceremony one day, and this guy had taken it 600 times or something, was sitting there, had feathers all over his head, Lakota chief, and he goes, I don't know what they're talking about with them expectations. We have no idea how this stuff fixes people. We just know it fixes what hails humans. And we wear these feathers so that we can remember the stories we heard when we were kids. Darnest thing I ever heard. So you can set intentions, that's good. But you can also not, I think it's okay if you want to, yeah, and see what you learn about yourself. Thanks for calling in, man. We love hearing from you.
Thank you, Chris. And I think we got another phone call there.
Diana,
you there? You listening?
Diana? Yeah. I'm here.
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm very interested in what the lady just said about calling in if I'm interested in doing some work, some work.
Yes, ma'am. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, and we can explore that. Love to hear from you.
All right. Can you give me that number again?
Oh, it's yes. It's 727.
Yep.
353.
Yep.
7727.
7727. Mm-hmm.
And you can just say that you heard about us on the show, or you're interested in a study, or interested in learning more, and we'll take care of you.
I am interested in the study, so it's 7727. I will call.
Awesome. Hopefully we can help you out. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks. Thank you to doctors. And Pat, we got a couple of minutes here. Mm-hmm. You're a FEMA. You've worked with FEMA. You've worked as a firefighter. You see what goes wrong during storms, mm-hmm, and what goes right. You see what the bureaucrats tell us to do. When you have a major hurricane, what does the most damage?
In Florida, it's the trees, okay? Those trees will come in your bedroom and break your nose if you don't watch out, you know? So I've seen people pinned in their beds from trees. And so we worry about the wind, and you should worry about the wind, but them trees are what will hurt you. So look around. Make sure your trees, I don't like them hanging over my house, but I get it. It's a thing. But just be aware that that's your danger, and you need to pay attention to that before it becomes, you know, hurt somebody. Clean up trash around your house. It's going to blow away. Just go ahead and clean it up and be ready. Have you about 2 or 3 weeks worth of, you know, snacks or whatever, and some food and water. And understand, there's going to be a pattern of behavior amongst all the people that you live with. And here's how it goes. Storm hits, everybody's uptight, full of energy, and they all help each other for about 2 weeks. Keep in mind that power's off and the internet's not working, so the anxiety level of these dopamine-addicted monkeys goes nuts. So they start getting nasty in traffic, and you have to anticipate that. So you just take your time, forgive people, they're uptight, they can't watch the football game, and they're ready to tear your head off for it. So you wander around and be careful with bacteria. What happens is sewage comes out of the ground, gets on everything. Next thing you know, all the restaurants smell like bleach when they open. And when they put the power back on and the air conditioning comes back on, it's pretty nice again. So there's a period of time in there. If you've never been through it and you're here when a hurricane hits, you will go through what I just described, okay? And it's just normal human behavior when a disaster hits. 2 weeks of cooperation followed by at least 2 weeks of being mean to one another, and then finally the power comes back on. Now, what you got to worry about is if it don't come back on. And I know, based on my experience in Hurricane Charlie in Orlando, the power was out for 2 months. And I'm going to warn you about something that ain't real positive, but I need to tell you, every piece of carpet on a slab-on-grade home and every single drape in the city of Orlando turned green with mold because of the moisture. You cannot live in Florida without air conditioning unless you're 3 feet off the ground. Think about that for just a minute, because air conditioning is hard to maintain. You got to have a lot of energy to do it. The grid has to be up. And without it, your house would be uninhabitable in about 2 months if it's a slab-on-grade home, unless you just did something really right. But that's real stuff. So get some food and water and get a plan. Please evacuate ahead of time. I've lived here. My family's been here 100 years, and I left here two and a half years ago to go to New Mexico for 2 years to help the federal government with a fire out there and destroyed everybody's property. And when I came back, I did not recognize this place. And I started my firefighter career in South Pasadena, and we had a scenario where we knew 100,000 people would die if a Category 3 storm went up into the bay, okay? That was back then. And the most of the deaths were from not being able to evacuate. So pay attention, evacuate. Get out of here if they tell you to, and just get safe and come back when the worst part's over. That's all I got. Yeah. It's a pattern, and you'll see it, guaranteed. I've seen it many times.
And, you know, I just thought I'd bring this up. You know, I always talk about solar and people that, you know, say even if you have a grid tie, that grid tie is going to go down. And, you know, having like these smaller systems, standalone systems, and then the new technology with electric cars is how you can use these cars and trucks as storage units. Mm-hmm. And Pat, you do have that Chevrolet.
I'm not plugged. I don't work, but I have a company. It's called Net Zero Energy Consulting. We just have a company for a reason, but we design stuff. And so what we do is I buy the vehicle to grid vehicles whenever they come out. I bought the Ford Lightning and the Chevy Silverado solely for the purpose of learning how to integrate those truck batteries into my house. If it was hooked up properly, I could run my house for 10 days off of the Ford Lightning and 30 days off of the Chevy because battery's twice as big. So these vehicles out there, if I was going to tell you buy a 2024 or newer full electric Chevrolet car and get the home integration system from General Motors, and your house could back up, your car could back up your house. And we're going to evolve into a species of electric transportation, integrated grid and solar battery storage systems, and the universe needs your help in cooperating in that transition so we can be more resilient and we can understand how to harness electricity and use it in a more harmonious fashion with the planet. You know, don't forget, we're part of the planet, and we are over-reliant on internal combustion engines and the deleterious effects that it has on our environment and on the world political system. So we're all in this together. We can solve it, but it's not going to be easy, okay? Remember the sacrifice of the people on Memorial Day. You weren't even born yet, and they died for you. Think about that. We need to live for the seven generations and stop being selfish. That's just what I got to add.
And Pat, when you say like 30 days, you're not running your AC.
Correct. Minimal use. Survival use.
But really, if you can run those fans, it has a lot to do with mold mitigation.
Yeah, moving the air, drying the air, that stagnant, moist air. Once it's 40% above humidity, it begins to grow. If you can keep it below 40%, it won't. As simple as that. When your humidity is 90% right now, and this afternoon shower thing's got it going. So, just so you know, survival, nothing out there is 5 gallons of clean water per person per day, 2,000 watts of electricity per person per day for survival purposes. That's important information, and you should memorize it and provide yourself and each member of your family with 2,000 watts of stored electricity. I'm glad you brought up them little Jackery thingies or whatever those home solar backups are. Mm-hmm. Just so you all know, you can put 4X of the panels on that thing than they sell you. So don't buy the panel. Just add them later, okay? Because they're going to sell you a cheap little thing, make that thing won't work. But if you buy 4X the power, max it out going in one of those, it'll last a full 24 hours. But the way they sell it, it only lasts 8.
Thank you, Pat Mahoney.
You're welcome.
For being on the program. You're wonderful. And, of course, Brian and Cheryl, thank you very much for being part of this Memorial Day show. Thank you, Bill, for being here. and thank our phone answer.
Sage. Okie dokie, and yes, and thank you to Sage for answering the phones and making this all possible. Thanks for all of our guests here today. It's been very informative. I appreciate it, speaking for myself. And you've been listening to WMNF Tampa.